On today's call, John and I discuss waking up early, AirPod Pro impressions, how to rig an election, John's stopwatch marketing video script, a new idea I'm working on for minimums.com, and the bastard Porsche I just bought. Side note, I need to make a correction about something I say later in the episode. When we get to the Porsche and James Dean story, I wrongly stated the guy's last name in reference was Turnip Speed. His last name is actually Turnip Seed with one less P. Apparently, I can't read. 1,000 apologies. All right, let's begin.
Hello.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Going good, Marshall. That's how I usually answer the phone, just cough into someone's ears. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Oh, man. Oh, so how's the stopwatch beta and like launch prep all going?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's coming together. Always feels like we're a bit behind where I wish we were, but
yeah, everything always takes like five times longer than you think.
Yeah, it really feels like we're like just in that last like 5% now. That we're like just kind of, you know, adding these things that have just been missing. Like, for example, we're adding in the trending clips in the live feed today. So up until now, you get to the bottom of the feed and it's just this blank space, which has been kind of confusing. But
oh, cool. Okay.
So when later today, when the build goes out, you'll see just things trending on Stopwatch, which isn't hard to do at the moment. It's like, you know, there's probably like less than 500 people on there. So, you know, you get a few likes on something and it'll start trending, but it's a good way of just, you know, casting a slightly wide net and see what's going on in like, you know, not directly in your network, but one node out, which has been interesting, just testing it. So that'll be in later this week.
That's fun. The ones that like always have a bunch of comments on them are always the most fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's cool.
Yeah. So it's come together. How's everything going with you? What's
good.
New?
Man, so much like holiday and there's like so many projects all coming together at once, mostly, well, work too, but on the personal side as well. Like our house is almost done. It's like about a month out from today. Got to meet with a mortgage company today, coordinating just like some final selection stuff on the house with that, choosing like, you know, wood stains and wood color and all that.
Cool. Is that, you find that stuff fun or is that just kind of a chore for you?
Oh yeah. I love that stuff. So does Jamie.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty fun. Dude, it's cool. It's cool. It's November 21st today. Most of the time our listeners that, not you, but that's interesting. You'll be in just before Christmas then.
Yeah. So they told us December 20th, but long story, but the builder doesn't do any like selections or anything. Like they're unique in that it's just like what you see is what you get other than you select your floor plan and front elevation. But we explained to them like, hey, literally day one, we don't like the wood color that they're putting in on the floor. We're like, we're going to day one, like close. And then guys are going to come in, rip out the brand new floor.
Oh, weird.
And put in the one that we want. And we basically like pushed hard, like, and they do not do this. They made a massive exception. We're like, listen, like it's going to look really bad for potential buyers walking around the neighborhood, seeing like guys pulling out brand new wood out of this brand new house. Like, whoa, what, you know, what's wrong with this builder?
Interesting.
So they budged and we're going to have like this light kind of birch colored wood go in. So that's the only curveball where it might delay a little bit, but I know that my mom works for a home builder. They definitely want to close before the end of the year just to get it off their books.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then that
sounds fun.
That Philadelphia rehab rental property that I've been doing.
Yep.
That is pretty much done. I just need to fly out there, hire like a third party inspector to just like walk it with me and just make sure everything is up to par. But ooh, sorry, I need to mute my laptop.
Dude, I think that was me.
That was me.
Or maybe, well, it was definitely me as well.
Both, I think yeah, we're going to clock out.
All right, I'm mute.
We'll have that in stereo. At least I know our clocks are in sync. All right. But yeah, yeah, that's basically done. So, man, I need to like figure out 2 days to fly up to Philadelphia sometime between like now and Thanksgiving or maybe the week after.
Cool. That sounds really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see it. I've been like wiring money and they've been sending me, you know, photos, but I'll find out if it was all just a massive scam once I show up. And
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one. So that's going to be before the end of the year as well. Maybe before next podcast.
I think so. Yeah. I should have. Yeah. And I'll do a blog post too. I've gotten progress updates literally every single week. So, I mean, I looked back at some of the first photos when they first started and it looks like a bomb went off in there. Like it just looks like, I mean, it was like a rat's nest inside. It was horrible. But now it looks nice.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So did you buy the new AirPods, the AirPods Pro?
I did, actually. I'm using them right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I still, when we do the podcast, I plug in the headphones with like the lightning connector thing that are made for the new iPhone, just so I don't have any like wireless interference or anything. But yeah, I really like them. It was funny putting in these old school like wired headphones. I realized like how big the AirPod Pro earbuds are. They like, you know, stick in your ear and they like, I literally have the smallest little nubs on them too, to like fit my ear. I guess I have small ears. And these old ones are just feel so much more light and honestly a little comfortable. My only gripe with the new ones are they're actually a little uncomfortable for me. The last one.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was better. Which I know that was like their selling point.
Did you put on the smaller little nubbins that you get?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, interesting. I've never really had that problem. It's a pain point I've never experienced. It was interesting putting them on for the first time. I was just saying how it's really cold in this apartment right now. And I've just been blasting the, you know, the heating with this like big fan. And I put them on and I wasn't really paying much attention. You know, when you squeeze them, the noise cancellation comes on. And I didn't really make the connection, but then like a few seconds after, I was like, oh, what the fuck? Like the, you know, the fan stopped working, but it's very visibly on. It's like weird. So I started like debugging it, like, you know, moving it around, waiting for it to come on. And then I realized I had noise cancellation on it. It was just like totally just got rid of that sound completely, which was honestly surprising. Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I think they're like dangerous. I try to make a conscious effort to make sure they're off if I'm like walking around and crossing a street because they really work well.
Yeah, it's surreal almost walking around a city with noise cancellation
on. Do you like the, I forget what the mode is, but it like it allows you to still hear the outside world, like transparency mode.
Yeah, I guess that is the one that I've been using just because, does it default to that one? Does it remember your last selection? I haven't really been given that much thought to it. I just like chuck them in and use them for the reason why I chucked them in and haven't really thought too much about it. I think right now they're in, hang on, I'm just testing it. Okay. Now they're in noise cancellation. So I guess mine are just defaulting to the other mode, the non-noise cancellation.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I like it.
Yeah. I almost feel like it picks up sounds that I wouldn't normally hear. I feel like I have like bionic ears, which is not a bad thing. I think it's cool. It works really well.
Mm. Yeah. Do you know if developers have access to that? If you could build some sort of like super hearing application?
I don't know. That'd be cool. Reminds me of like those things they would sell. I used to buy like spy gear as a kid. And they'd have that like giant cone thing and you could, you know, supposedly hear really far and listen into private conversations, which I don't think worked at all. But yeah.
I have a friend that's working on a company that's basically building for AirPods. Like the hypothesis is that AirPods are going to be this new sort of big platform, like the Apple Watch was supposed to be, or maybe not the Apple Watch, but you know, e-watches in general, like technical watches in general. Pretty interesting.
That's
pretty
cool.
Interesting hypothesis. Yeah.
What's the company? Is there a website?
Name is escaping me, but it's sort of like an entertainment type thing.
Okay.
Cool. So the thing that he was dabbling around with, and this was probably pushing a year ago now, so I'm not sure if this is still what the company's focusing on, but basically it would be like an experience, almost like a kind of podcast, like a highly produced podcast type thing, but it's for two people And like, I give you one of the AirPods and I keep the other AirPods. So we're listening to the same thing. And then it's designed to kind of like, it's like an experience. So for example, like it would tell one of the people, because it's stereo, right? So the way that he was sort of designing these experiences was, okay, one of the two stereos is basically talking to one or the other person. So one of them says something like, okay, close your eyes and hold your hand out. And the other person says something like, okay, like slowly touch your partner's eye or whatever. Basically, it's like one person is the sort of instigator and the other person is the person that's like receiving the experience. But it's everything is sort of timed so that like the person who's on the receiving end like hears stuff as the other person is told to do specific things. Hmm. So it all sort of like makes sense. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I did a couple. Oh, shit. Is that still recording? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I did a couple when he was space testing it, and it was really fun. But yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, if you remember, let me know. I mean, we can put it in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, nice. Oh, man, this is the earliest podcast we've done before. Normally, what do we record these at, like 11 or something like that?
It's like... It was 8.
Yeah.
8:30 was the calendar invite, although we didn't get started till 9.
Yeah.
Or just before 9.
Yeah, I haven't had coffee yet today. So I started waking up consistently early and rolling out of bed and getting to the gym and going for a run like every single day.
Oh, good for you.
Honestly, has helped so much with, there's this quote, and I forget who wrote this or said it, but like the morning is kind of the rudder of your day. And which basically what he means is like, if you start off the morning kind of like, you know, really chill and, you know, watch a show or read a book or just kind of like, you know, be calm and quiet and just like have something entertaining you, the rest of your day will be kind of mirror that and be a little more sluggish. Whereas like if you get going and like you're productive early and the rest of your day is more likely to be similar to that, which really resonated with me because I got into a horrible habit. And I think part of it was when I got pretty burnt out, but I would wake up at like whatever time and then like watch a show or read a book or just like plan the internet for like hours in the morning and then get started with my day at like noon, like, you know, work till 6 or 7 or 8. And I just like couldn't get focused. Like I would just struggle. And ever since I started doing this, like the rest of my day is just so much better. Like I finish my day just feeling so much more like I got a lot done. I just feel fulfilled. So I don't know. It's been obviously the whole morning thing is super cliche and it's like one of the oldest pieces of wisdom people talk about. But I mean, it's true for a reason. It's definitely been helpful.
That sounds like something I should probably do. My sleeping habits are all over the place at the moment.
Yeah.
They're like yesterday I woke up at 4 and was like, well, what am I going to do? Just like lie in bed and not be able to sleep. So I was like, just get up.
Oh, wow.
You know, and as soon as I'm up, it's like, well, you know, because we have this remote company, people are always working. Someone's always around, you know, has some question or something. It's so easy just to get sucked into it anytime. Yeah. But I don't know. It feels like now is like right before the launch, it feels like this is just like kind of how it's going to be for the next few months.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of equal parts love it, equal parts hate it.
Yeah. So speaking of, any new updates on a solidified launch date? Are you guys still, there's a lot to...
I haven't exactly locked in a specific launch date yet, but the plan is still the same. I think we've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before, but it's like keep honing in on the app, you know, keep sort of like wrangling it all together, get it to the point where it is solid. We can start onboarding more people. That's the goal before the end of the year. And then it's really just like very early next year, just kind of decide, you know, just kind of like keep polishing, keep onboarding more people. And then as soon as it feels like it's working and it's right, do the launch.
Cool.
So that's the kind of rough plan.
Yeah.
So early next year.
Nice. So pretty much anybody who shows interest can get access to it. It's just obviously not in the app store. They have to like add their email address and ask for an invite. Is that right?
Exactly. Like basically everyone that's been putting their email address in to the website we haven't invited yet. It's really just from people who have been like DMing me, like asking specifically for access.
Gotcha.
So like once we make these sort of final round of tweaks, that's when we'll start onboarding more people.
I see. So the next push will be the trending stuff. But I know you've been tweeting about hiring someone to do just like final, like a little animation and like those little details that just like really make something feel polished. Any idea when that kind of stuff is coming, or is that going to be saved for last once you guys are done tweaking and changing things?
Yeah, that's the kind of plan right now. Just get all the features in, prioritize getting that stuff in, get it working, and then worry about the, you know, flair.
Yeah.
Sort of nice polished stuff.
Yeah. That's cool. What about the video? I knew you and Nato were shooting that. Was that like two or 3 weeks ago?
Today, I'm actually going over there later today to sort of sit down with them and hopefully get a rough cut by the end of the week.
Oh, sweet.
That's another big part of it because that explains what Stopwatch is. Like that's the onboarding experience, basically. We try to condense it into this video, which is if we don't have that, or at least any kind of onboarding, if you sign up without any context as to what Stopwatch is, or you haven't seen it, or someone hasn't like sat you down and talked about it,
right?
Pretty confusing without that video. So that's another reason why we're kind of holding off until we onboard more people, until we get that in. But it's also looking like that's going to be imminently in. So I think that'll make a big difference.
Nice. So what's the overall format of the video? Like, does someone on camera come on and start explaining things, or is it narrator and there's like actions happening?
Yeah, so there's a character who's a girl who she sort of represents you, the user. And she's totally quiet. She doesn't say anything. She just sort of walks around with her phone in her hand, looking, intrigued. and then there's a voiceover person that's basically, the kind of time lord type person who's...
Is it you?
No. I do have a cameo in it, though. I do have a cameo. I'll tell you what the cameo is in a sec.
Okay.
I think it's pretty funny. So anyway, so the way that it starts, so reminder, it's not just like a regular video. It's going to be... about 30 seconds of time that's going to be made up of multiple different clips. So they're going to be treated as like different posts in the timeline. And when we're explaining stuff, when the voice of the guy is explaining stuff, the user can play around with the timeline and play with the things that he's explaining, basically. So it's like an interactive, onboarding thing.
Yep.
But the way that it works is this character, comes on screen. The first shot is in front of this clock wall. We just went to Goodwill and bought like every clock. This is actually a funny story. We were in Goodwill. Me and Nate were in Goodwill just buying a load of clocks, just like, looking for the clock aisle and then being like, okay, cool. Like there's some clocks. Like just like looking after, like we probably bought like, 30 clocks or something like that. But as we were putting these clocks in the trolley, this lady came over and she was like, she could tell that she was getting this like sense of FOMO about not buying clocks. She's like, wait, why are you buying so many clocks? Like, should I buy a clock? Like, she just like had this like desire to like, what am I missing out on? Like, what's the secret here? Like, why are you buying so many clocks? So that was kind of funny. So anyway, I guess I'll get back to the video. So you start out in this clock wall. That sort of symbolizes you. Then the first thing shows... The character pull up, like this is from looking from over her shoulder. So you see her pull up her phone, you see what's on the phone screen. And that is the creation flow for the Stopwatch app. And then you see her hit record. And then as soon as she hits record, to sort of reinforce this idea that, when stuff is recorded at the same time, the clips that were overlapping the same period of time, the user interface shows them at the same time. So as soon as she hits that record button, the perspective that you see in the first shot collapses below. So you sort of can tell that like, oh, that's the shot I can see in the first shot. And also I can now tap on that to actually like make that the focus. So I think just that one thing explains so much of kind of how Stopwatch is and how it works.
Is this is a video in the app as like scrolling clips in the timeline, or is this just like you superimpose what it would look like in the app in the video and I can watch the video on YouTube or whatever.
It's in the app.
Okay.
There probably will be a cut for YouTube at some point.
Yep.
But I think the way that you'd experience it is either in the app or on the website, like stopwatch.com/demo or something like that.
Yeah.
So then, you know, you can like, there's a few seconds of overlapping. So like in one of the perspectives, you just see the girl and her phone up. And then one of the perspectives, you see this cool bike that we found. We've got this guy off Facebook Marketplace to come and just hang out with his bike for a few hours.
How did you get this guy? You posted an ad on Facebook Marketplace?
Did I not talk about this in the last podcast? No. I guess not. I guess we just kind of glossed over some of these details. Well, dude, it's actually really funny because Nato was like, yeah, man, like, here's what we're doing. We don't want to buy your bike because he was selling his bike.
Okay.
We don't want to buy your bike, but like, can you just come and hang out downtown for a couple of hours? We'll give you $200. And we were sat in this coffee shop thinking like, God, like a lot of this kind of rests on this guy with the bike. Like if this guy doesn't turn up with his bike, like we don't really have much of a plan B, you know, it's going to, hopefully this guy turns up.
Dude, yeah.
So what we did, we reached out to him. He was like, look, dude, like, we'll actually give you $300 if you come, like just to try and like lock this in. And he did come and it was all fine. But we were talking to him and he was like, dude, like, I was so sure you guys were going to rip me off. I was so sure this was part of an elaborate scam just to like nick my bike, you know, get me downtown.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I would be thinking as
well.
Yeah, you know?
I was thinking the same thought just now. Like, it's just like Craigslist. You're like, okay, I'm going to get murdered over $300.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But he came with his friend and they had such a good time. you could tell that they didn't really do this kind of thing very often. And like, we actually got that guy to be in the video. Like he was on his bike with his helmet on and he didn't have to do anything. He just sat there. But then he got all these cool, like, you know, videos and like pictures of him sat on his bike. Like he was the talent, you know, for like an hour. Like he was just like sat on his bike. And then there was, he came over and he asked me like really sheepishly, he was like, you know, is there any chance I could get a water, you know, or like a drink or something? I was like, yeah, man, there's if you, that corner actually, there's like a little table we set up with, you know, Cokes and like, there's like biscuits and like all sorts of stuff. Go help yourself.
Yeah, craft
and he's
service.
Like, oh, yeah, exactly. Him and his friend were just like, it was like Christmas morning. They were like, wait, we have to pay for this? No way. This is awesome. So that was pretty funny. So anyway, getting back to the video. So there's that overlapping part. Then it transitions to, we built this this TV wall, which is just like lots of old CRTV TVs that we... Dude, apparently there's a guy in St. Louis that rents like half-broken, half-working CRTVs if you ever need some of those.
What?
Yeah,
like
there's a guy...
For this kind of like cool music video, like is that the selling point? Obviously, you guys are doing something unique, but why would people buy or rent them?
I don't know. I guess he fixes them. He's just a dude that like likes to fix them. And I think he does. He usually probably just like buys the broken ones, fixes them, and then sells them. Like some of them, there's like a, you know, actual like collector market for these things. Like the cool looking ones. Like there's, he was telling me, and I can't actually remember, but there's like sort of two categories. There's like the sort of recent modern category, which is just like kind of worthless, almost like 90s tech kind of thing. But if you start going back into like 70s, 80s, and they start looking like... They start looking a bit different, that's when they start to be actually like worth fucking around with and worth fixing. But anyway, there's like a stack of TV walls. They all have different things represented on them. And that is actually like a kind of a metaphor for one of the features of the app. So that sort of... supposed to visually represent the idea of being able to scroll through the fourth dimension. So, you know, any specific second, if there's multiple clips, you'll be able to sort of see what happened at any specific second. So on the TVs in the video, you know, there's lots of different things happening on each different TV. The camera slowly zooms in on this middle TV, and the middle TV is this rocket that's taking off. So the idea is like, well, at this moment right now, the most interesting thing that's going on planet Earth is this rocket that's taking off. So she makes some gesture that kind of like, you know, she like looks at the rocket, like maybe touches the screen to indicate like, oh, you know, I'm kind of interested in that. Then what happens is, you know, the rocket takes off. So there's now like a few perspectives that start overlapping. It's her watching the screen of the rocket. Then it cuts to some other footage of we have of like the rocket actually taking off. Like, I think it's like, you know, we bought the rights to this like really cool NASA footage of, you know, an actual rocket actually taking off. Then like as it starts to take off, we filmed this other person whilst projecting that same footage onto them. So it looks like the rocket is sort of like, it looks like they're right in front, like watching the rocket take off basically, or like watching it on their TV or something like that. So now like lots of things start overlapping. It's the girl who initially, you know, noticed the rocket taking off. There's like the footage actually of the rocket, you know, at like the launch site, like slowly moving up in the air. Then it, you know, probably will cut to like, you know, NASA HQ, people like giving it like a round of applause, like, cool, like it all worked. Then it cuts to my cameo, Marshall.
Are you the astronaut?
It cuts to the spaceman. So I have a space helmet, which I bought unrelated, like a couple of years ago or a year ago. So it just cuts to me. And the focus isn't on me. Like, you can't tell it's me. It's just like anyone watching it, I'll be able to say like, oh, I'm actually, that's me. But it's not like, I didn't like inject myself in there and like break the, you know, break the whole, oh, that's obviously John. Like, you're kind of breaking this whole thing. But so then it's like, what happens then is the other clips end. So the astronaut kind of becomes the focus automatically because no other clips were overlapping during this astronaut was, you know, up in space. And I'm just there, just like, you know, the rocket's taking off, Marshall. So it's like, it's intense. Like I'm being shaken around by the force of the rocket. But then the way that we bring this back to the product is, it's actually an interesting kind of design challenge. Like one of the things we wanted to do, like one of the reasons for the onboarding, we really want people to post something. Like if people post something at the end of the onboarding or during part of the onboarding, we consider that like a huge, huge win because it gets over that initial hump of like, this new social network, like not really sure what to post. Like, so that was kind of one of the reasons, one of the sort of filters we were running this whole thing through. So the spaceman, there'll be a prompt in that clip. So it might be the voiceover guy, it might be, you know, the blurb on the post, but there'll be some kind of prompt that says something like, basically acknowledges that there's nested timelines and you can drill into any clip and there's a nested timeline inside. And if you want to reply to that timeline, you can. So when you drill into that clip in the onboarding video, there's going to be like three or four example replies from sort of users, essentially. By the way, the prompt is going to be something like, you know, view's amazing up here. What does the view look like from your window? So something super easy, like anyone can kind of do that. Like walk over to the window in the place that they're currently sat and just like show the view. It's like super easy to do that. But yeah, on the backside of that means like one, they've posted something, two, it should be kind of interesting just seeing, you know, over time, all these different people like, you know, what the weather is or what time of day it is, or, you know, it's interesting getting that kind of content once it starts getting like collected up. And then there'll be some sort of process on the back end to surface these people who are just posting new stuff and then, you know, try and kind of encourage other people to, but should try and surface those people in a way that means that there's a good chance that if you come to Stopwatch and you post something during the sign up flow, you'll get, you know, a few likes, a few comments, a few new followers, that kind of thing. So you're not just like shouting into the void as soon as you sign
up. That's cool. It's like a video game. Like video games are really good about like, there's this point where like, you know, it opens and there's like story and video footage. And then like, they've gotten really good lately at just like transitioning to when like all of a sudden you have the controls and you're, you know, there's like a prompt for you to do and you're now playing the game.
Yeah.
That's a cool transition from video to like, all right, now use the app.
That's cool. Yeah. Video games are like next level. Some of the stuff they do. I saw this really cool thing that they did. It's just one of those things that's like, ah, that's such a nice way of solving that problem. Do you remember back in the day where there was this whole concept of do you have inverse controls or not? I don't know if this is still really like a really big thing, but especially on console. And it was like, as soon as you start any first-person player game, it's like, most people will just throw up a menu and it's like, okay, do you play inverse or do you play not inverse? It's like, okay, like whatever. But this one game basically just throws you into the game. And the first thing that like the character says is something like, look up here. or something. And then your instinct is just to like, you press whatever you're used to go up, you know, like if you're used to inverted controls, you'll press down. If you're used to non-inverted controls, you press up. And they just record that decision. And they're like, okay, yeah, we told him to look up and he pressed down. So we're just going to set his controls to inverted. Smart. And obviously you can change it, but it's just a way of like, just kind of guessing.
Yeah.
And guessing in a sort of very informed way. I thought it was really cool.
Huh. That is good. Can I see the rough clip when you get it?
Yeah, hopefully today. Really trying to get something in, like get like a rough version in just as soon as possible so it's not blocking us from boarding more people. So if we do get it today, I'll send it. But if it isn't today, it'll probably be fairly soon.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. NATO's good. I'm looking forward to seeing how he edits this together. And yeah, I mean,
he's good.
I was watching obviously your behind the scenes stuff on Stopwatch and Twitter, and the style looks really cool. You guys nailed it.
The thing I like about working with NATO is he has all this perspective. Like his focus isn't making startup videos, you know, like his inspiration is like cinema and film, and like that's his kind of baseline. So if you work with him, you don't really get like he's made, I think, more traditional startup-y type stuff for us before, but I don't know, you get
he's a bit very
different
artistic.
To work with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Monkey King Productions, by the way, is the name of his studio. If anyone wants to reach out and give him some extra work, which I'll be very happy about that.
Yeah. He's a cool guy. I like him.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I bought a car. I think you might have seen.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Fill me in. Obviously, I've been following very closely on all social medias, but tell me the story. How did this all come to be?
Yeah. So, I mean, for context, I sold my last car like a month or two before we were going to close on buying the Ludwig building, which was now 3 years ago as of November 3rd. And I mean, we were living downtown, obviously, and like we could get away with not owning a car, but I also just felt really strongly about, I want to put in as much money as I could into that investment. And I'm glad I did, because 3 years later, I looked at like what I put in and it made sense. But yeah, it was, you know, we live in Dallas, Texas now, which is not walkable friendly for the most part. Like I could walk to the WeWork I'm at right now from our apartment, but other than that, you have to use a car. So it was time. I was looking at everything from, you know, just a basic commuter car to like really nice ones. And I don't know, I've gotten like really into personal finance over the last few years. And I also really love cars, but it was like, oh, like I don't want to justify dropping like a ton of money right now. Like I'd rather, you know, put that money into like investment properties and things like that. So I kind of met in the middle of like the two ends of the spectrum I was looking at, and decided I wanted to buy a Porsche Cayman, which this one's a 2006, so it's like 13 years old. Anyways, I looked around and I was looking for a few weeks, and I ended up finding like a really rare spec. So right when these cars were announced from Porsche, I don't know how much you know about the Porsche 911, but it's like basically been going...
Basically nothing. Okay. So fill me in.
Well, Porsche's been making the 911 for like 40-something years, I think. And I mean, for the most part, it like kind of hasn't changed. I mean, like, you know, they've updated it, and you showed the first one to the latest one now, and you'd be like, those are totally different cars, obviously. But the general shape and the idea and like where the motor's mounted and the engine that they use, and like it's all... They've just been perfecting like the same car for like 40 years.
Wow.
So I use that though to say that like when they were going to come out with the Cayman, it was basically like a smaller version of the 911. And everyone was just like, this thing is going to be faster than the 911 because it's smaller. And they had to like put a smaller engine in it than the 911. Otherwise, it would have been like way faster than a 911, which like killing their flagship car, basically.
Oh, interesting.
So when it came out, you know, people talked about like, well, if you put a 911 motor into one, like it would, you know, be like the best of both worlds. So a handful, I mean, I don't know how many people did this, but a decent amount of people have put 911 motors into Caymans. So on this one that I bought, the guy that got it in 2016 immediately bought a brand new Porsche 911S motor and swapped it into the car. So it makes like basically Porsche 911 power in like a much lighter, the Cayman weighs a lot less than a 911. It's smaller. And then the other thing with 911s is their rear engines. So like the engine is like all the way in the back, which is in theory not super great for handling, but they've like overcome that dynamic. Well, the Cayman is mid-engine, so it's like more closer to the center, but still kind of behind you. It's a two-seater. So yeah, it's kind of a unique spec. It's the car rips. It's really fast.
I love the idea that there are, well, I'm going to push you a little bit. You said there's, you know, probably a handful of people that have done this. How many people do you reckon? Like, I'm pushing you for a number. Like, how many people do you reckon have the means and desire to, like, essentially, like, can you just buy the engine without buying the car? Or do you have to buy two cars and then, like, throw like, the leftovers away? I suppose that would be a dumb way of doing
it. I think...
Can you just buy the engine?
Yeah, I think you can buy the crate motor from... I mean, back then, I don't know if they still make that model or that spec motor in, like, a crate motor is, like, a brand new motor from the factory, not in a car. I mean, I have no idea, but enough where, like, if you search forums, like Cayman and 911 forums, you can find people mentioning like, oh yeah, this shop did one, okay. Like that shop did one. But I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's probably 100, you know, something like that. Like, yeah. I mean, I could be wrong, but yeah, not a ton. I mean, the guy who did it spent the money and I reaped the rewards because I only paid a little bit more for the car over like just a stock Cayman with similar mileage. But like that kind of upgrade is 20 to 30 grand probably. Like I think the motor is probably 20 plus the labor.
Oh, that's interesting. God, that's actually just interesting sort of seeing. Okay, so the motor's 20 grand. How much would the car cost? I'm just trying to...
That car new, I think, was like 65 base back in 2006, something like that.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, cars depreciating and all that. Like, modifying a car, you just, like, don't see your money back. And
yeah. Is that your plan? You're gonna, you know, keep flying the flag of what you started? Like, you know?
Yeah, I want to do some exhaust stuff. The car needs some kind of wing. Like, I mean, it has the power to justify a wing at the back, in my opinion.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, usually, I mean, I would stay clear of some highly modified car. Usually, like, I would either want to just buy stock and do those things myself, or just not, you know, buy someone's because it's modified. Like, you don't know how good of a job they did. But the thing about this is, it's just a stock engine out of a different car. So like you got, you know, huge upgrade in performance and you have like a reliable 911 motor, you know, obviously it had to be swapped and there was that work, but yeah, that was kind of the only reason why I would have touched this car is because it's still just a stock engine. Yeah. But
so is there a way of like, if a car person saw your car on the street, is it obvious that, oh, like that's one of those modified ones with a 911 engine, or is it just sort of like a secret?
Yeah, it's pretty much a secret. The only difference with that car, though, is it throws people off because the front end, when they did the motor swap, they also put a... 911s have, like, tons of different versions. There's, like, the Touring. There's, like, a little bit faster Touring. There's, like, the turbo one that's, like, really fast. Then there's, like, GT3 and GT2 specs, which basically mean they're faster. They're more, like, race-specced. And they put a GT3 front end on the car. So it looks like it's really confusing when you see it. You're like, if you know Porsches, you're just like, what? Is that a Cayman? Is that a GT3? Like, what is that? But yeah, the thing about Porsches is the engine's like totally hidden. It's in the Cayman, it's in the back, but if I open the trunk lid, you can't see anything. Like it's totally hidden. Yeah. It's behind the back seats, but it's, yeah.
So is the sort of dream now to pull up to a red light next to a 911 and like, you know,
at my fast furious moment.
Hope they kind of like flex on you and you can be like, okay, and then beat them. Or, well, you probably will beat them, right? Because it's lighter and smaller.
Yeah, that's the dream. That's the Fast and Furious, Vin Diesel, and I forget the other actor.
When that happens, let me know. It seems like that's going to be a big moment.
Yeah, 13-year-old Marshall will be very, very proud. I'll definitely.
I think you get to keep his car then as well.
Yeah. That's rules of a car enthusiast. Yeah,
that's how it works. Yep. That's how it works.
Give me the slip. Yeah. I have a little nugget for you. So my wife Jamie she's like, you know, what are you gonna name the car? She's big into names. She like named her scooter and whatnot, and I jokingly said the little bastard, which I mean,
that's great.
So I mean, it's like, you know, the car has kind of been bastardized in like all the right ways, but that name is from James Dean, who he was like a, I don't know if you know who that is, but he was like the quintessential like cool guy of, I think, the 70s. He starred in a few movies and he raced cars. Yeah. Like he was like the car guy slash like pretty boy and movie, you know, star. And he had this Porsche Spyder, which he named the Little Bastard. And I mean, I had just known of that for a while, but it just got me thinking about all that. So he died in a car accident. Like he only started in like three movies, became this big thing, and then just had this fatal accident. So I was just like kind of looking up the story again, jogging my memory. And so the way he died is he was driving that Porsche Spyder and he got into a head-on collision with someone else. And, you know, he died on the scene. But the guy he got into an accident with was named Donald Turnup Speed. Real name, not fake, I swear.
Wow.
His last name is Turnup Speed, like T-U-R-N. U-P-S-P-E-E-D. Like, real last name.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
He was destined to die.
Yeah. Well, Donald Turnup Speed was still alive. He survived the accident.
Oh, yeah, wow.
James Dean, yeah. I think.
What's he up to nowadays?
Well, I think he's passed away since, but yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I wonder how he eventually died.
I don't know. I think the article alluded to like he had to live like a very quiet life after that, or like for
that doesn't sound like Donald Turnup Speed to me.
Yeah, speed demon. Anyways,
so I do have one thing for you.
Okay.
It's you can tell I didn't have much to talk about this week because this is maybe a bit of a stretch, but I'm going to tell you about this really bad idea I had. I just want to sort of run it by you. Full disclosure, not going to do this. No plans to do this. Highly illegal. Don't do it.
Okay. Awesome.
But was just thinking, just as a thought experiment, thinking about ways or thinking about what it might take to rig an election, just as a thought experiment.
Okay.
So I should also preface this by saying, obviously, I don't know that much about politics. I'm kind of flying. I think all of this with a pinch of salt, getting all of this secondhand. So don't do this. Take it with a pinch of salt. Okay, I think that's enough frame. So apparently, in 2016, there was about... So obviously, you know, the way the Electoral College works, it's, you know, people in different states, like their vote matters differently, whatever. Like some states in swing states, like your vote matters more. Apparently, there was about... If you like dive into the numbers, the year that Donald Trump got elected, there was about a 60,000 vote swing. Like if you really hone it in to the votes that actually mattered, like if those 60,000 people happened to vote a different way, you know, Hillary would have been president.
Yeah.
So just that's an interesting way of starting this, because now it's like, okay, you only really need to influence 60,000 people or 60,000 votes, which I think that seems a lot more achievable than you know, millions.
Yeah.
So first of all, I just thought about buying votes, you know, like, you know, I wonder what logistically that would be. Like, I wonder how much that would cost, you know, buy a few votes. And I was just sort of just kind of wondering. So that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. Like, obviously, this isn't a natural question. We can't do this. This would be illegal. I think we'd both get in trouble. But theoretically, hypothetically, how much would you sell me your vote for?
just my one vote.
Yeah, just my one. Just one vote.
Well, taking like morals out of this, and I'm just like, I want to sell it. Or do I have to?
Well, you probably. Well, it's you don't really know, because yeah, I've asked a couple of people this question now, and the implication I've got back from most people is like, well, if you're, I don't really mind selling you my vote, you know, but if you're doing this, that makes me think that you're doing this for a reason and you're potentially buying like millions of people's votes. And then I'm like kind of against it.
Mm.
That seems to be like people's breaking points. So yeah, like put aside moral stuff and let me know how much you'd sell me your vote for. Like how much is it worth to you in Texas?
So this would be like voting for the next president. Like,
yeah,
that's the, okay.
Yeah. And also like, maybe I'll vote for the person you want. It's not necessarily...
Okay, so I don't know. I just have to go with whatever you tell me. Like
exactly.
Oh, so 50-50, it's who I want, and I've gotten money to do that.
Exactly.
But 50-50 not.
There's a chance you'd have to go and vote for someone you wouldn't want.
Mm. It really depends also, on like, how bad I think the world would be if, you know, who I don't want to win gets the vote.
Well, that's an interesting way of framing it, because I mean that implies that your vote in Texas actually like could make a difference. And maybe it could. Maybe it could.
That's true. I got to consider where I'm at.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could answer. I'd have to really think about it. I'm kind of
$100. $100.
No, I think I'd want more.
About 500.
I'm probably a more expensive on the spectrum of the 60,000 people you'd need to buy.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. So moving on from that, I figured it would be kind of hard to press you on that, especially on a recorded podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. If I ever run for president one day, I don't need this coming back to bite me.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. So first thought after that was, okay, so it's kind of tricky to buy people's votes. Also illegal. Perhaps though you can pay people not to vote. Like, okay, did a bit of Googling about that. That's actually also legal. I guess that was like the first thing they thought of. Even if you Google, can you pay people to vote? In that, like the first result, it says you also can't pay people not to vote. It's like, you know, that doesn't work. We thought of that kind of thing. But then I was thinking like, okay, theoretically, you could probably put on an amazing event, unrelated to politics, you know, but... you could probably put on an amazing event that appeals to the demographics of people who are more likely to vote a specific way. Like, for example, these are probably two bad examples, but just as an example, like, let's say you wanted less Republicans to vote. You know, you put on, like, a gun show in Texas or something like that. Say you want, you know, less Democrats to vote. You, like, put on Burning Man or something like that. You know, like, you put something, you just do something that's, like, stereotypically loved by the demographics of people that you don't want to vote.
Okay.
And you just make it the best event ever. It's just, like, just the best thing ever, you know?
Yeah.
The best thing ever. You can't miss it, really. And then you just put it the same day that you have to vote, and you just kind of hope, and then you just hope, you know, a lot of people don't do it. But here's sort of like the way that you make this work. Because I think putting on an event with 60,000 people who are just like so infatuated by this event that they're just forgetting about voting. They're just like, oh, well, I just won't do that because it's like a minor inconvenience. So that's kind of probably hard to do for 60,000
people. Oh, you're talking about doing this in a swing state where you're not trying to convince people to come to that state. You're just... getting the people that are in that state that, you know, let's say you wanted to swing Democratic, you do a giant event for Republicans.
Exactly.
And
like make it awesome.
Just distract them, awesome. Basically.
Exactly.
Ah, I see.
Exactly. But I was thinking, you know, 6,000 is kind of hard. So what you do is you basically just find like 60 billionaires to each do 1,000. Like, I know this is dumb and it wouldn't work and it's illegal and blah, 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 but seems like at least theoretically possible to have some kind of actual tangible effect
there's probably plausible deniability in this. Like, I'm... like,
no, totally.
I'm just doing an event. Like, what? Free country.
right, exactly. It totally is plausible liability, yeah.
Huh. So I always thought, like, I had given this some thought before as well, of like... well, couldn't you just, you know, rally people that do want, like, you find a bunch of Democrats or Republicans or whatever way you're trying to get this, and you, like, play the long game, plan ahead, and you're like, all right, like, you're moving to swing state A for the cause, you know, for like 2 years, and you register as a citizen or as a resident there, and you know, yada yada. Yeah.
That does seem like a that's interesting because that people could do that, like people could move.
Yeah, I think you know, I don't know what the legality is around like the if the organizer is in any way associated with the you know presidential nominee, like that's probably meddling in the election. But if it's like grassroots, like you can't, I don't know that you can stop people from, you know, even if they're blatantly coming out and saying, I'm doing this to swing the election, like free country, I can move wherever I want, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's flaws to our political system for sure. Where, I mean, I think the powers that be probably do think of things that dance around this kind of idea. Maybe not so extreme, right. But yeah.
Yeah. There's obviously a lot of people that have a lot of, like interest one way or the other to make this happen.
Yeah.
You know, like get like 100,000 people doing 100,000 sort of small things. I don't know. It's just an interesting way of thinking about the world, isn't it? It's just interesting.
Yeah. I remember like a lot of the discussion around Trump's election was, you know, all social media, you know, that his team got really savvy with it. And that's why we have the whole Cambridge Analytica fiasco and everything.
Right.
But dude, I remember in 2008 having this conversation with my dad of like, man, like my dad, you know, my family's more conservative. And I remember telling my dad, like, you know, like, so obviously Obama won in 2008. And I was just like, man, like they just owned social media. Like they embraced where people were and they did it well. And I just didn't see anything on social media or any candidate being savvy at all on the Republican side, just as like an observer of both. And then, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that was obviously a huge factor as to why Trump won is like, they really mastered social media and how that can influence people, which I mean that, I don't have anything against that. Like as just taking myself out of who I want to win. Obviously there's malicious ways to go about things, but I mean, both sides are going to use the tools at their disposal, which yeah. Anyways, yeah, we shouldn't get into politics on here. That's a slippery slope, but
sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. well, you got to fill me in on Brexit stuff because you follow it more closely. What, without giving your opinion on which way it should go, where is it at right now?
Let's not get into politics. Next question. Like, but, so what do you think of Brexit?
Yeah,
like,
what's going on with that? Yeah.
Oh, God, dude. I don't know. I feel like anyone who actually is interested in it, who's listening, will know probably more than me, or at least like doesn't want to hear me like ramble on about it. And anyone who like doesn't care.
Okay, do it quick if you can. Where's the stand?
Well, we're in the middle of an election at the moment. Okay. So the issue before was Boris Johnson. The makeup of the House of Commons was such that nothing could really happen. Like there was, everything has to get voted through, and there was just too many people opposing what the government wanted to do. So the only kind of way out of that, they thought, was just have an election. Just like have an election and hope that they get a majority in the House of Commons. So that's kind of, we're in this election mode where that's what's going on at the moment. So seems like that's probably what's going to happen, or at least like he's going to be in a better spot than he was before, but it does kind of remain to be seen where things will land. I think we'll know, I forget exactly when the day is, but I think it's before Christmas.
Yeah.
So it's coming up.
Wow. That's a project that seems to never end and always have a pushed off date.
Yeah.
The Brexit thing. Yeah, it's just like, God, when did it start? It was like years ago. I think
I think it was 2016.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. I remember, I think it was then because I think we were raising money for Need Want. And I remember one of the investors like totally went dark on us and then eventually replied and was like, sorry, man. Like he's a financial advisor. He's like, all my clients were just like freaking out about Brexit. And we're like, oh, okay. Makes sense.
Oh, dude, I actually watched basically like it was this random video that got suggested to me. It was like a 10-hour long video And it was the BBC coverage of the night of that election. And it's like the whole thing. So you see like the whole build up and like, you know, at the beginning, it was just like, the talk was like, yeah, Remain's going to win, Remain's going to win, Remain's going to win. And then gradually over this 10-hour period, it was like, it was basically like the whole Donald Trump election again. You know, so everyone thinks Hillary's going to win, everyone thinks Hillary's going to win. And like, oh shit, like throughout the night. I remember, dude, like, I know we're not just talking about politics now, off the back of talking about not talking about politics, but do you remember when, like, we were in Mexico that night when Donald Trump became president. Yeah. And I remember, like, it was literally... It was the reason why I think we would probably have stayed up and watched that a lot longer, but it was all in Spanish. So it was like kind of, I didn't know any Spanish and it was like kind of hard to watch. It was kind of interesting. You'd still see like the graphics on screen and stuff like that, but it just seemed so obvious that Hillary was going to win. So I just went to bed. I went to bed and then woke up at, you know, 3 a.m., quickly glanced at my computer. And then when I went to bed, it was like 95% Hillary. When I woke up at like 3 a.m., it was like 95% Donald Trump. It was wild.
Yeah, I do remember that. We were making jokes about the wall's going to go up before we can get home and all that.
Yeah.
That was wild. A lot of crazy political stuff's happened over the last like 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
Anyways. So I've been putting off telling you about a new project until I was actually going to go forward with it. So I've got a new thing I'm working on.
Oh, cool. Let's hear it.
So it's to go on minimums.com, actually, to like, I know nothing's really happened with that. And I think the name works really well. So, I've wanted to do a course about making physical products or like a little school or, you know, informational thing in some form. So I've been working on that kind of behind the scenes for a while. And a lot of these things, like, you know, someone will like teach a course on something or have like a little school, but as like a destination, there's not a whole lot of reason for people to come back unless they like build it off of a blog or something. Otherwise it's just like a flash in the pan. So I was thinking about that issue and I was thinking about how the course will be about making physical products like the indie way. It's kind of the angle, which basically implies, you know, it's very different if you're a larger company with, you know, you're like an Apple or, you know, someone much more than just an individual, you know, using the own money that they have to develop physical products. And kind of taking through that, using that lens and taking, you know, someone through of like, okay, an idea, then you should do a prototype and this is when you should start talking to factories and this is how you find them. You know, this is how you judge like a production sample. You know, this is how you do packaging. These are your options for logistics and, you know, how you should get it from wherever you produce it to, you know, if you use a warehouse, talking through the economics of it, like the numbers that you should shoot for as far as markup and, you know, everything we've gone through over building multiple physical product companies as just like, you know, under-resourced individuals. So the other thing I wanted to do is basically like curate a bunch of these resources into kind of sections of like, you know, good industrial designers, good sourcing companies, good packaging suppliers, good packaging designers, you know, good fulfillment companies, you know, things like that. So the idea is to build the website as kind of like a resource for, you know, if you're going to make a physical product. So curating tools, curating service providers, and then having kind of the educational side to it. So I, there was this project that came out maybe 2 months ago called Dwellito, like Dwellito. I think it's like basically anything ito at the end in Spanish is like little. So it's kind of like little house is the meaning. So this guy, Caleb, designed and built this website. I mean, people should look it up. It's really, really well done, which essentially curates all the different modular and like tiny home manufacturers and builders. And he kind of, you know, he has really good photos of all of them and approximate costs and kind of also rates them based on like value and, you know, manufacturer reputation and things like that. And then I think he monetizes it by partnering with some of these companies and getting a cut if someone, you know, buys one of these from Duelito. But I thought it had a lot of parallels with how I imagine like the tool side and like the service provider side. So I hit him up and he's a freelance designer and we're working together. So he literally started yesterday. Oh, cool. We're going to try to bang it out over 3 weeks. The course will take me longer to finish, but yeah, I'll see like kind of early designs based on what I'd given him for wireframes and like brand style and everything. But yeah, I'm excited. He's really good.
That sounds interesting. So there's sort of two separate things. There's like the website, the sort of resource, and then there's the course.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
or you think,
I think there's a lot of different ways to monetize, you know, a site like that. Like, you know, are you familiar with MakerPad, Ben Tossel's thing?
Yeah, kind of familiar with it.
Yeah, cool. So Ben Tossel, I think, was like community at Product Hunt for a while. I remember he helped us like late at night sometimes with getting our Product Hunt pages right and like queued up and stuff. But cool guy. He's like a kind of at the forefront of the whole no code movement, and he's put together a bunch of tutorials and stuff on how to use these different no code tools. And then he'll partner with some of these companies and like they'll basically pay him to kind of have like a featured page on there, and like they'll build out, you know, more tutorials and like resources and information about like using that tool. Mm. And then there's a whole like community to it. I mean, he's primed to like do a job board as well on that. Like,
yeah.
Job boards, I think, do really well if, you know, you can get the you know, marketplace filled with people posting jobs and of course looking for them. So, I mean, I think there's that side to it, like jobs and commerce, you know, pulling up jobs from like other e-commerce companies, you know, by operations and customer support and design, stuff like that. And then of course, like the educational side. So, you know, first thing is about making physical products, but like a logical next step is then about like acquiring customers and marketing physical products. So yeah, I've always wanted to do something that's more like content based and monetize that way. So we'll see. I'm excited to get it out there and do something, launch something new.
Cool, man. Yeah, that is interesting. Looking forward to seeing it. Good, great name too. Good shout using the minimums domain, I think.
Yeah, I think it applies well to I mean, you and I know the big question always was like, what's your minimum order quantity? Like every factory, you know, has their MOQ. And like, I think it lends itself well to like the indie kind of lens of like, that is the question, as like that dictates if launching this product's going to cost you $10,000 or $200,000, you know, like,
yeah.
Okay, we'll build your backpack and we need, you know, $30 a unit, but we need you to order, you know, 6,000 units versus like someone else. Like, yeah, we'll do 50 units at $40. Like, okay, cool.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, obviously like an Apple of the world would be like, what's your production capacity? Like how many widgets can you squeeze out in a day? So yeah, I thought it worked well for that. So I'll keep you posted. I'll show you kind of the early designs that I get today. I'll send them over to you, but
cool, man.
Yeah. The brand style I'm going for is, you've seen like vintage 70s and 60s and 50s product ads. Like they're very, very different than how we market things today, which I don't want the website to feel like it's an old vintage ad, but I thought the color scheme of like that era of like the kind of like burnt orange, I'll send you a color swatch of it, of what I'm doing, but yeah.
Oh, dude, I just love when people do stuff that's just new, you know, and interesting and like just doesn't look like it doesn't have like flat people on the front.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I think I'm going to hire someone to do illustrations for like, you know, the card that you would click on to then see all of the warehouses, for example, or like all the industrial designers.
Oh,
and cool. I think that could, yeah, have that kind of vintage style to it, illustrated.
Cool. So,
anyways, yeah. We're not going to talk about politics, but my other question in politics is... So a couple updates, the whole sewer lateral thing in the Ludwig building.
Oh yeah. I walked past this. Actually.
Yeah. Nothing's been done yet. So it was supposed to happen like 2 weeks ago, but the local utility company is doing work at the end of our alleyway, so we couldn't do it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was actually curious. I was like, oh, they're like kind of, yeah, there were people working there, and I was curious if that had anything to do with it. That makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, so I think we'll have to do it. I mean, definitely when they leave, and they're estimating to be done in like a week or two. So nothing yet. Yeah.
Oh, did you buy the new Pokemon game?
Oh, dude, no, I haven't. I'm going to. To be honest, I've just been so heads down recently yeah. with stopwatch stuff that I didn't even really, the whole thing just passed me by. Until you said it just then, I didn't even know that it was out.
Yeah, I just ordered it this morning, but I'm going to like put it in the corner and like not touch it until like I'm literally doing nothing around Christmas until New Year's because, yeah, a lot going on.
Is there any multiplayer stuff?
I know almost nothing about it. I just know it got high reviews. It looks like, you know, the N64 version that I always wanted when Pokemon first came out.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I am excited about that, actually. I hope it's actually good. I feel like the Pokemon games have been... The recent ones have just been a bit too, like, hand-holdy relative to the first ones. I don't know if that's just a factor of me growing up and becoming not a child, but it's... I prefer the earlier one.
You're a jaded Pokemon trainer, it sounds like.
Yeah. Dude, what I am excited for this Half-Life announcement that's coming later today. I know we can't talk about it yet because it's just after we finish recording the podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can talk about that in the next episode, perhaps. Yeah. Keep an eye out for it.
I was literally... So I think I told you, I bought the domain dumbmugs.com
after
posted a bunch of... And realized like it's just available. I was like, well, I have to own this. So I might actually, I just like for fun wrote down a few like jokes around memes and stuff like that I would hire an illustrator to do and then sell mugs about them, which probably gonna make $0, but I thought it could be fun. Well, one
it's
of them,
fun marketing exercise, isn't it?
One, it just so happened one of them was, I was just trying to come up with something around like a Half-Life 3 joke and using the creator of Half-Life. He's like a funny looking dude and like illustrating him, but it's literally in there. I mean, people are always like making jokes about like, you know, this plus that equals Half-Life 3 coming soon, you know, like that kind of stuff. It's weird that they're still not going to do it, but they're going to make a Half-Life game. Yeah, whatever. We'll save it for the next one once the news comes out.
The thing that's annoying, I asked what was apparently a stupid question to my friend who's like a VR. He's just interested in VR. And I was like, is this going to come out on the Vive? Or not the Vive, sorry. Whatever the one we have, the Quest.
Oh, yeah, the Oculus. Yeah.
And he just sort of like laughed at me and was like, no, dude, this is not coming out.
Wait, why? Dumb question as well. Why?
Well, I guess Valve have their own like VR headset, which is like way like overpowered, way more powered than the Quest is.
Oh yeah, the they probably make the Vive, however you say it.
I'm not sure, but the thing is it's one of those things. You need a gaming PC, you need you know, whatever the headset is, which is probably a lot more expensive than the Quest is, probably like a lot of cameras set up, probably a lot of wires. I don't actually know if that's true, but I think it is. Either way, it's like I'm probably not gonna buy a computer to play this game, even if it's the best game ever.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe YouTube. There is a game good enough. Yeah, there we go. Oh, if it's VR, like maybe... Hopefully there's a way of watching that that's not horrible.
Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah, look up some VR YouTube videos. I've seen them. Some guys will do really good ones where like they have a little thing showing them in like their green screen kind of room and what they see in the goggles.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fair enough. All right, well... Maybe we can talk about that on the next podcast.
Yeah, sounds good. Cool. Good catching up. I'll talk to you soon.
See you later.
All right. See you.
Bye.
Bye.